Hi, I'm Doug Gordon. Welcome back to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio. If you're looking for a show that explores food, history, and travel, then look no further than the Netflix docuseries High on the Hog, How African-American Cuisine Transformed America. This four-part series combines food, history, and travel to create a compelling portrait of exploring Black history through the lens of African-American cuisine. High on the Hog was created by an all-Black creative team that traveled to various locations around the globe, including Benin, West Africa, Texas, and Philadelphia. Food writer Steven Satterfield is the host of the show. He told Beta's Steve Gotcher about how he got involved.
I was actually just fortunate to be a part of a larger vision of adapting a very important and renowned text into a television series. And so the book was originally written about 10 years ago by Dr. Jessica B. Harris, a food scholar and historian. And it's really a tale of the origins of African Americans as told through food. And so we take a journey that begins in Benin, West Africa, through the Atlantic into Charleston, and so on, moving chronologically through the series as we do through the Black American experience.
And why was it important to begin in Benin?
Yeah, a lot of people may not be aware of Benin's history and role in the trade of human beings. But Benin is a place where off the coast of Africa, among other goods and cargo, humans were taken in captivity and brought into slavery. In the U.S., I think many people obviously know this story. But Benin is a pretty small country with an outsized importance in history in this trade.
I felt as though I was stepping back in time in Abomey. I mean, this is a place where you can still walk the actual road the enslaved walked. It was a vile march, a march that ended in a city called Ouidah, where so many of us left, never to return again.
How have the foods that the slaves brought over to this country, how important have they become to the way we eat?
I mean, I think in more ways than we can count. We certainly learn about the rice crucible in the second episode of High on the Hog. And I think the thing about the rice in particular, Oryza glabrima, which is a derivative of West Africa, the famous Carolina gold rice that we learn about, it's not just that it was a culinary delicacy, it's that it was an economic boon for the United States. This was the most coveted, the most well-known rice in the entire world. And so in order to take a grain and turn it into a profitable commodity, you really need culinary know-how, yes, but you need agricultural know-how too.
So where did the rice disappear to?
A combination of a lot of things, but it boils down to this. African expertise to grow the rice disappeared. Slavery is over. They didn't have a business model to go to, and it just blew up in everyone's face.
It's staggering to realize that Charleston had a nearly 80% decrease in rice production after the Civil War.
I think just as much as we think about, you know, the derivative dishes that come later that we learn about, like macaroni and cheese, they're a little bit more well-known. But what I like to also point out is that a lot of the knowledge and influence happens, you know, from an agricultural perspective as well.
At the end of the first episode, you visited a mass grave in Benin, and it was a very, very powerful moment. Tell me about your experience and what that was like for you.
You know, I think for me, it was really a feeling of, I think a lot of folks who have had the experience of a kind of homecoming. an ancestral homecoming, going to one's country of origin from the perspective of a refugee, even if that is a multi-generational experience, that kind of separation, I do believe that the reverberations move across generations as well. And so for me, as a Black man who grew up in the South, to be in West Africa, to understand that the ground that I was standing on was the site of my ancestors who didn't survive to make that horrific voyage, who weren't healthy or well enough to even make that voyage, was a really overwhelming moment. You know, I think not an experience, and just in terms of the emotional quality, that is unique to me. I think many people have felt similarly in their own version of homecoming.
The only power that the newly enslaved had was the power of refusal.
That's right.
And so they could sometimes say no and refuse to eat and shut their mouth. And they invented a diabolical tool. It was called the speculum oris, so that they could be force-fed. Because people resisted. Resistance was every step of the journey.
I love this notion of food and the refusal of it being a way for us to take back power.
Yeah, power of no.
That's right.
The power of no, I won't eat that.
Right.
And that's what you have in the marrow of your bones, too.
That's right.
I'm curious what you learned about your history and yourself that surprised you by making High on the Hog.
Wow. That's a good question. I think that my prevailing sentiment was I was just tremendously humbled on a personal level. You know, Dr. Jessica B. Harris is and has long been one of my favorite scholar, a scholar whose work has impacted my life and my own curiosity about food as a means of exploring Black history and culture. And so to have been able to be with her in Benin, a place that she's been traveling for, gosh, I don't know, almost 50 years maybe, and writing about, it's still something that I will struggle to comprehend that actually happened in my life. And I'm tremendously grateful. I don't know if that's like a lesson, but I really was and remain so humbled for the experience.
It's an amazing thing to witness on the screen. And I imagine being there must have been cathartic.
Yeah, no, it was, I mean... Look, the things that you see on the screen as far as me convening and breaking bread, that is as real as it gets, you know, the joy and euphoria I felt around people like Gabrielle Carter, around BJ Dennis, Michael Twitty. I mean, and that was just here in the States, you know, with my brothers and sisters on the continent. We haven't really seen anything like High on the Hog on food television. And so as someone who's deeply impacted by food media, grew up watching food media, I really was so in awe of the experience, not only as someone who got to partake in it, but just as a unique offering in the space. And I really, really hope that it is indicative of a direction where we're going, because I think there's a lot of richness and context and nuance that we're able to garner when the host has a kind of cultural connection to a place. But having a Black production crew and having a Black host and having the material really move through someone, you know, who has lived the Black American experience makes for really authentic and emotionally powerful moments like the one we see at the end of the first episode. And I think that folks who consume television and other kinds of media can tell, you know, what that difference is like on a personal level versus the perspective of sort of a tourist or passerby.
The beginning of the fourth episode, Freedom, grabs your attention right away. It's a 1941 recording of Laura Smalley, a former slave. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so that episode is the onset of the story of Juneteenth, which is ultimately a liberation story.
You remember when the Civil War was being fought?
Well, I can't remember much about it, but I remember this much. We all got up and all of them went to the house. Went to the house to see old Master. And I thought old Master was dead, but he had been off to the war and come back. All the niggas gathered around to see old Master again. You know, and old Master didn't tell you, it was free.
He didn't tell you that?
No, he didn't tell. They wait till, I think now they said they wait till 6 months out of that, 6 months, and turn them loose on the 19th of June. That's why you know you celebrate that day, colored folks. Celebrate that day.
The thing about Juneteenth that I like to interject is that, you know, Galveston, Texas, again, talking about geographic proximity, is really a go-between for traders and colonists and just a center of activity and commerce. And so Texas, just from a geographic perspective, was quite isolated from the rest of the South, the southeastern United States, where slavery was thriving. And so they were the last to find out about their own liberation. And so the beginning of the fourth episode kind of sets the stage for this revelation of freedom.
You also discovered a barbecue joint in Huntsville, Texas, attached to the New Zion Missionary Baptist Church. And there seemed to be a spiritual element involved in creating and eating barbecue and soul food. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, the New Zion Church is so interesting because it is a blending and a melding of these two very specific but intertwined parts of Black American culture, of barbecue and church and religion. And so, you know, it begins pretty humbly, like, you know, many churches have after service picnics or convenings, but the barbecue was so good that it actually became a way to kind of subsidize the church itself.
And around lunchtime, Sister Ward began to cook food for their dinner, and she got a foot tub. And that foot tub, she put a refrigerator rack over it and began to grill meat. She said that we couldn't cook for people stopping and asking, are you selling barbecue? The very next week, she borrowed $50 from the church and began a business, New Zion Barbecue.
We did, I think, initially report that New Zion had gone out of business, but I believe they're still there. So.
Oh, that's great.
Good news.
Why do you think food is such an effective way to explore African-American history?
Well, I think that it's not just an important way to explore African-American history, but human history. I think that food has a unique ability to help us get to dialogue and to understanding in a way that other conversation and other vessels just simply cannot. And the reason for that is because food is the one singular experience that we all share as diversified people. There's just so much to learn about our place in the world, not only today, but in a way that explains how we got to where we are. So I think it's the most enlightening way to better understand and engage with the human experience.
I'm really encouraged to know that there's going to be another season of High on the Hog. What's planned for the upcoming season?
Funny enough, I actually don't know. And I know that that's probably surprising, but we're still trying to piece that together. We're almost there. What I can say is that it will be a chronological continuation of the book. And so we kind of break at Texas at this moment of emancipation, and we will resume the story from there.
Stephen Satterfield, it's a great pleasure to talk to you. Congratulations on High in the Hog. We look forward to the second season. Thanks again.
Thank you, Steve. I appreciate it.
Stephen Satterfield is the host of the Netflix docuseries High on the Hog, How African-American Cuisine Transformed America. Find out more at WPR.org/beta. Well, that does it for this edition of Beta. Thanks to our guests, Thomas Lennon, Chuck Klosterman, and Stephen Satterfield. If you want to hear it again or binge on past episodes, Beta is now available to follow on Spotify or wherever you catch your favorite pods. And you can keep up with us during the week online at WPR.org/beta or on Twitter at WPRBeta.
Even for the internet, it's pretty shocking.
Beta is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Red Meat Productions.
Fantastic.
Our music and technical director is Steve Gotcher.
Just going to look for a new bicycle. Something, you know, a little flashy, but within my price range.
Our executive producer is Adam Friedrich.
I'm not your little Dapper Dan doll, okay?
And thanks to you, our alphas. More Beta comes your way next week. Until then, I'm Doug Gordon.
I don't want to work here without a mustache. I really don't.